Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Mann hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Sabres game tonight. They're playing at 9 o'clock out in Denver to take on the Colorado Avalanche. Pre-game right here on WGR. We'll get going at 8 o'clock with Brian Koziol and Paul Hamilton, who we did speak to earlier in hour number one. The Bills are back to work today. We'll get a word in on them when Sal Capaccio joins us in just about a half hour. And coming up later today, this afternoon, college football, as yesterday's Sugar Bowl was postponed due to the terror attacks in the early mornings yesterday. I believe the death count has risen to 15. For more on that story, of course, our sister station WBEN has the latest there. The game has been postponed to today at 4 o'clock. But we go back to the phones as we're getting connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And we go to Alan. Alan, how are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you doing? To disagree friendly, I don't agree with you about Carson Wentz. And if you remember in 21 when Frank Reich was his coach, he was having a great year, and all of a sudden something went backwards on him. I think he lost his last three games, and the one game he had to get in was the Jacksonville game. And
oh,
that
awful.
Was a year that mm-hmm. it was his worst game of his professional career in Jacksonville. Well, Jacksonville kind of plays well against Indy anyway, and they have historically for years. And I just think this weekend, I think Denver's going to pace that team. I think they're going to roll them by two or three touchdowns. I don't know what it is in me. Denver plays that team tough. They hate it. They hate that team. My daughter lives in Colorado Springs, and she talks about, you know, her boyfriend's father out there is a huge Broncos fan and how they just hate the Chiefs. And if you remember the block field goal last year, they beat him in Denver and should have beat him in Kansas City again. And I think they're going to attack Wentz because he's a statue back there.
That's the thing. Their tackles, though, are so bad. Wentz can't move. I think you're spot on there.
And I just one other thing, too. I'm very shocked at James Cook not making the Pro Bowl. I thought, you know, I'm not a Pro Bowl guy. It's a touch football game, as ping pong or whatever the heck they do. And they play video games and stuff. So it's kind of like a joke nowadays. But James Cook leading the league in touchdowns, not getting in. I think he'll be an alternate eventually because half these guys don't want to go anyway. Allen won't go, so they'll find some guy like Huntley again or – well, you know, who's the quarterback for the Dolphins? Huntley?
Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but Huntley currently playing, yeah.
Yeah, and one thing on that, too, Tua probably is done for the year, so if Miami came here, we'd see Huntley. And I read online this morning, Adam Schefter had it out there, that he's got his back is really bad. He's not playing this Sunday again, and he's probably done for the season, even if they make the playoffs. So, I mean, you take that. I know Tua's their quarterback, but even if he was in, I think the Bills would smoke him. But anyway, that's my opinion on Wentz. I'm not a fan of his. I know he had one good year and led him to the Super. He was a backup. Then he went, you know, and he's got good leadership skills, but he just can't get it done. I don't know what it is. But anyway, take care.
Yeah, Alan, thanks for the call. I actually don't know if he has good leadership skills. I think it's a big issue with him. I think that's why the Eagles moved off of him, is he was not great in their locker room at all.
Right, and I think, I mean, it feels like ever since that all happened, it felt like there was something else going on in that locker room too, just because of the way everything went down with Doug Peterson leaving shortly after and everything like that. Like, it felt like the vibes were just off there. But hey, they got the Super Bowl, so nobody really asked questions, and you just kind of move on. But I just... It's tough because, like I said before, like, I'll defend Carson Wentz forever, but it's right now you can't really defend him because he's not what he used to be. He's an older player. He's injured. He's not that he's on a bad team by any means, because the Chiefs are amazing, but
no, but
he's going to be playing with their backups. He's not going to be able to
build a career as a backup. He got his big deal.
He should have been a long term starter. Like, he was starting caliber. We just didn't get to see his career to the full effect. I mean, again, if he doesn't tear his ACL, or even if he doesn't hurt his back, I really think that he's maybe not still in the Eagles, because there, like, again, there was weird things that going on there, but I think he's still a starter in the league. He might not be the best starter in the league, but I mean, look at a guy like Jared Goff, not that he went through injuries, but he went through a lot of scrutiny with everything that happened with the Rams.
Oh, yeah.
And then he gets traded one for one for another quarterback, and then that quarterback goes on and wins the Super Bowl right away, and Jared Goff is still a starter in the league, and he's still helping his team get to potentially their first Super Bowl in literally forever.
I was going to say, I think, like, inarguably, it's been a win-win for both teams.
We're talking
about the Pro Bowl. We'll talk James Cook there in a second, because I do think it's a really good shout. Led the league in rushing touchdowns of 15, and he's a second-team alternate. It is what it is. I feel more bad for these guys because it's still in their contracts, making the Pro Bowls and stuff with, like, their fifth-year option as well, some of these rookies making it. But, like, Goff, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFC. He makes the Pro Bowl this year along with Darnold and Jaden Daniels. And you look at the years he's had in Detroit. This is his fourth season in Detroit. First year, they were really bad, 3-10-1. There's a famous video when they won their first game. His wife was crying. And it was a big moment for them as well, especially leaving a team that, you know, outside of his rookie year, he had a lot of team success there. Then the next year, they're 9-8, missed the playoffs, but his stats were back up there. He's 4,400 yards passing, 29 touchdowns, 7 picks. And then these last 2 years, they make it to the NFC title game last year, and he throws 30 touchdowns. This year, another 4,000-yard season, 36 touchdowns, 10 picks. And if they win on Sunday night, they are the number one seed. First time in Lions history, they'll be the one seed. And he'll probably have around, like, 38 to almost 40 touchdown passes if he has himself a great game.
Yeah.
And they'll probably be lining up to win at least another playoff game, which is something for Lions fans. Winning multiple playoff games? Hell yeah!
Unheard of.
Like, let's go!
But again, going back to the whole, you know, Carson Wentz thing here, I'm not trying to say, you know, oh, it's just because of the injuries, because there was other things. Like I said, there was problems going on in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell.
That's why they drafted the guy in the second round in 2020.
Right. But leading up to that point, it was, again, if he doesn't hurt his ACL, if he doesn't tear his ACL, if he doesn't hurt his back, one of those things doesn't happen, he's in a completely different situation. Mm-hmm. He's maybe a starter in, like, I don't know, because he leaves Philadelphia in 2020, let's say.
But goes to Indy. Indy is who he starts for in 21.
Let's say that still does happen. He goes to Indy in 21, and he's healthier, right? He doesn't have the back injury, or he doesn't have the knee injury with the history there. There's a good chance he might still be in Indy as the starter. I mean, granted, they might still draft Anthony Richardson, but still, like, that's not going very well.
Yeah, his career really did fall apart due to injuries, and I think him personally as well.
Yeah, right. But, well, it's a lot of mental stuff too.
Like, I do think, though, on Sunday, because their tackles are bad and he can't move. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of Mahomes having to move around a lot. He's still taking a beating.
Right.
And so Wentz, who already can't move, his scrambling ability has died as his career's gone on. I think that's going to be a tough day for him. And that's where it's like, Denver, just do the job, get it done,
right,
and you're in. You know, Dolphins I don't think it's official, but they're probably going to start Tyler Huntley against the Jets. And then the Bengals will play the Steelers. We'll see if the Bengals can even be the Steelers. I mean, we'll see on that. I think the Steelers have a lot to play for, whether it's playing Baltimore or Houston. And for a team that has not won a playoff game since 2016, there's a clearly more favorable avenue But I will say this, if I'm Baltimore, I don't want to see Pittsburgh at all. I don't want to see Pittsburgh at all. Because that team, look, you had a great game against them earlier in January or earlier in December. But that team, for the most part, has had Lamar Jackson's number. It's had the Ravens' number. You've had a tough time with them. I'd rather not see them in the wild card round, knowing I've got to play Pittsburgh. And I said this when it was potentially Pittsburgh's the 3 and Baltimore's the 6. The idea then of Baltimore, yeah, sure, you get to host Pittsburgh. Then you got to go to Buffalo. And then the likely chance of, even if you get through Buffalo, you got to go to Kansas City. That is a tough road to go.
It's a long road.
Yeah, for any team at all. That's where, like, for Buffalo, you get Denver. It'll maybe be a tough game, but you should probably be able to, like, close that out based on your talent. Then Baltimore at home, probably a little bit better. You feel better going into that game. Then Kansas City. It's a hard road regardless if, you know, things fall as they may. But for Baltimore, that's grueling, getting the divisional matchup that you don't particularly play well against. Then Buffalo, then Kansas City. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Cliff on the line. Cliff, how are we doing today?
Hey, I got a couple comments. I'll make it quick. So I think the Pro Bowl actually helps Josh Allen. So my reasoning is there's only two of us. So how did we get to the second seed? There's only two Pro Bowlers, and Baltimore, who has 9, has the 3 seed. We must have the MVP, and they must have, you know, a better group of top-end talent, which I think our team is better. But, you know, that's just my 2 cents on that. If Lamar is so good, he has more Pro Bowlers. Josh Allen only has 2 Pro Bowlers, himself and Deion Dawkins. That would look more highly on Josh's record and whatnot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Cliff, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And I agree with you on that point. I mean, it's just excluding the quarterbacks. The Ravens have 8 Pro Bowlers. The Bills have 1.
Yep.
And excluding the quarterbacks.
And even if you want to exclude the defensive players, there's only 4 offensive players, or there are 4 offensive players for the Ravens.
Yeah, which, so I mean,
and one of them's the running back.
I think the MVP discussion is done. I think Allen is going to get it. I also think for a lot of people, and I genuinely mean this, I think for a lot of voters, the fact that Derrick Henry is going to finish 2nd in the league in rushing, only behind the 9th player to rush for 2,000 yards, does not bode well for an MVP candidacy, especially because I think, funny enough, we've actually sort of fallen back into genuinely giving it to the most valuable player rather than just like the highest stats, looking at Lamar last year. And then this year with Allen, you know, Jackson's been incredible. There's no denying that. We are watching some of the best quarterback play ever between Allen and Burrow and Mahomes and Jackson. And then you look over in the NFC and you see some of these young guys like Jane Daniels, who was taking what was perceived as, and was rightfully so, a bad organization in Washington right back to the playoffs. Goff, we just mentioned how well he's playing. You know, I think we're seeing some of the best quarterback play maybe, I don't want to throw out ever, but definitely in recent memory. And so I think that's going to play against his case. It is surprising, though, that guys like James Cook are not on there, because I don't want to like discount his season just because he's not a Pro Bowler. 15 touchdowns. If they let him go out there against New England, he should get 1,000 yards as well, which would be 2 straight 1,000-yard seasons for him. He did make it last year as well. He is also a second alternate. So if one guy doesn't go, which could be Henry or Joe Mixon or Jonathan Taylor, he'll get in. It's more surprising Mixon made it and not James Cook.
I was just about to say that.
That's more surprising.
We were talking before about guys like Christian Benford not getting on there. And again, this is all stats, and you've got some of the things you have to base it off the eye test. James Cook and Joe Mixon, stat-wise. Joe Mixon has 11 touchdowns, James Cook 15. Joe Mixon, 993 yards. James Cook, 981 rushing yards, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
James Cook, 258 receiving yards. Joe Mixon, 304. The one thing that I think gets it, because they are running backs, Mixon has... Ooh, actually, I read this wrong earlier. No, this gives a better case to James Cook. Mixon has 240 rushing attempts, and James Cook has only 197.
So really, should be James Cook.
Yes,
the Mixon poll is very weird. It's very very weird.
And you think? So I'm thinking back here, like looking back at the season and accolades and stuff that players get throughout the season. Joe Mixon had that one game in week 3 where he was like pretty good and won AFC Offensive Player of the Week because they couldn't give it to Allen 2 weeks in a row.
See, I'm like thinking about it too, and I'm like, I can't remember a game where Joe Mixon went off this year.
He had the one game against, I think it was their week three game.
I'm looking now.
Week four against Jacksonville, 101 yards, one touchdown, and like that was it. But he won Offensive Player of the Week. And he also had a good week, I guess, against Indianapolis this past week, but they barely win 29-27.
This would have been week one against Indianapolis. He was very good.
Okay, never mind.
30
I'm reading this.
159 yards and a touchdown. That was the week that he was very good.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. The schedule flipped on my screen. But still, right, that was very good. And then he had another week in week three and week four and week five. So he had a few strung together in the beginning of the year where they were good, but it was never like notable, right? Mm-hmm. Like he was never the guy. And I'm not saying James Cook has had those had games where he's the guy, but there's been a lot of moments where you look at that offense and it's like, yeah, because James Cook was really good that game.
I'll say I watched him kill Miami in week two, like alone.
Yeah, it was basically just him.
He didn't even touch the ball that much. He had 18 touches,
right?
And three touchdowns.
Yeah, and so it's just. I just look at like Joe Mixon's stats, and yes, he has had consistency, I guess.
Oh my
but
God, not even. He had 12 touches, three touchdowns. Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
In that game against Miami.
11 rushing attempts, 78 yards, two touchdowns. He had one catch for 17 yards and a touchdown.
Man. Okay, yeah. God. No, I look at the two side by side. And again, it's a stats thing, so you don't want to just base it just off what you see on the paper. But, I mean... Again.
I mean, come on.
When you give the ball to James Cook, you know something explosive is going to happen. Joe Mixon is kind of the opposite.
I don't feel that way with Joe Mixon at all.
No, he's going to just push his way through whatever. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, his yards per attempt is laughable compared to James Cook.
Yeah. For this weekend, we do have some news on the Patriots side of things, or at least be some excitement. Drake May is going to start. There were some rumblings that maybe he wouldn't. It'd be Jacoby Brissett. Are they going to try to keep him healthy? We talked to Sal earlier this week, too, about like the pride aspect of this. And you can't just go out there and try to lose. These guys won't allow it. They won't let that happen. I like Drake May. I like watching him a lot. He had some beautiful throws 2 weeks ago against the Bills. So I'm kind of excited to watch him play again because I think if they can get it right, whether it be the coaching or the overall talent, you know, whatever it is, I think they've got their quarterback. I think they've got their guy. So mm-hmm. I'm happy to watch him now when the team is bad and I don't have to worry about him, knowing in a few years, every time I see a highlight, it's going to strain my heart. Because I think that's coming in like 2 or 3 years. If they can get the head coach, Gerard Mayo is still up in the air. We don't know if it's going to be a one-and-done kind of deal. The talent level's still low. If they figure it out, though, all of a sudden every highlight I see is just going to break me, mm-hmm. which is tough because I was a huge May guy when he was coming out of North Carolina.
I've actually heard a lot of discussion today from some callers with Jeremy and Joe this morning of like, should the Bills lose so the Patriots don't get the first overall pick and it kind of not sets their rebuild back, but it like kind of slows it down maybe a little bit. And a super small, no, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it really makes that much of a difference. What'd they go from one to like four?
Cool. They can't trade that pick.
Yeah, but they don't need to draft a quarterback.
No, but like they need more talent.
If they trade the pick, they'd get more.
That's exactly the point.
That makes sense.
They need more talent around the quarterback. If they move back to four, who's trading with you? You just have the fourth overall pick is wonderful. It's great. It'll be a great, but it should be a great player for them. But if they've got the number one overall pick, they're moving back to four. They maybe pick up another two, a first next year. That could change things. I'd be for it. If it's a late game, I hope McDermott has all of the bad decisions.
Yeah.
Quote unquote bad decisions. And I'll take it. I will run with headcanon so hard. I really will. If that happens, I will run with headcanon so hard of like, no. 40 chess, baby. He hated the Patriots when Belichick was there. He still hates them now.
Who doesn't?
The Jets and the Dolphins have kind of taken over like the main hatred because the Patriots have been bad. No. This is a guy that actively wanted to embarrass the Patriots when Belichick was there and the Bills were getting good. Don't forget that.
I mean, it would be a like galaxy brain move.
Let's go.
To do that, which would be...
I don't even think it would. It'd be like, it's close. Ah, we're going to go for 4th and 8. Interesting. Let's see if Mitch can do it. If he does, good for him. If not, well, it's a shame. We just lost a meaningless game. Oh, you guys moved to the 4th overall pick? That's awesome. Good for you. That's awesome. Yeah, it's good. Hey, way to pick up that win. It means so much.
Mayo's on the sideline trying to just like hold in like a celebration. Or he's like faking a celebration like, yeah, we won.
That's what I want. That's what I want. So bad. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got John on the line. John, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I got a kind of an obscure trivia question for you. You should probably ask Salas off the air when he comes in.
Mm-hmm.
What do Robert Saleh and Marv Levy have in common?
I do not know.
Both of them won two games on teams that ended up winning four. Marv came in after they fired Hank Bulla. He went 2-5 at the end of that season. And, of course, we all know Saleh was 2-3 when he got fired. So they Kelly threw three touchdown passes in the season opener that year. And here's an interesting fact. They were to Pete Metzler, Thurman, and Andre Reed, who all played in the Super Bowl years. So, and the next week on Sports Illustrated, back then was, you know, big magazine. The headline on, you know, Kelly was on the cover, and it said, "A Namath with knees." You know, they were comparing him to Namath. You know, Namath had terrible knees. So, you really got to know your Bills trivia to get that. But I think Sal might be able to figure it out if you give him 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, thanks for the call, John. He came in and they go 2-5. Saleh was 2-3 and then was fired. I mean, there's somewhat a connection. Yeah, I mean, somewhat. Not really. I think Saleh's going to get another coaching job.
I'm excited to see where he goes because
it's not going to be immediate.
But he did go right to the Packers as like a defensive consultant, which I thought was like the funniest thing because, you know, Aaron Rodgers and all that. But I'm interested to see where he goes because he is a defensive guy, and we've seen kind of the shift here. It seems like teams are looking more towards offensive head coaches. But, I mean, the Commanders hired Dan Quinn. You know, like, it's not a given that it's all going to be offensive head coaches from here on out. But
no, because I think Flores is going to be
Brian Flores is another one.
Shout this year.
He's Robert Saleh in a year, right? Like, Flores is going to get opportunities this offseason.
Saleh's going to get hired as a defensive coordinator and then hope to go again.
I mean, hey, if Brian Flores leaves Minnesota, who's to say Saleh doesn't just go right to Minnesota?
No, I think this is a really good idea. I wonder, too.
Especially because he can learn. I mean, I guess learn under Kevin O'Connell. Haven't they crossed paths before, him and O'Connell?
Saleh?
Yeah. Wouldn't it? Because O'Connell was O'Connell in San Francisco as part of the Shanahan tree or no? I think of somebody else.
Look this up. On Saleh, though, or not on Saleh, but on Flores, I wonder how much his comments, like the stuff that came out about Tua, actually doesn't hurt him as much as maybe people thought.
Yeah.
Where it becomes like this was just being coached maybe too abrasively and maybe too rudely, was just voicing his opinions of this guy is simply not good enough. And ultimately has kind of been proven correct. And him more just, he had frustration. And we know that he had frustrations with the team wanting to tank, wanting to go for Tom Brady, wanting to do all this. He wanted the best guy for the job, where it seemed like the Dolphins wanted the best, you know, PR guy or what have you. Because remember, Herbert in that draft class was not perceived as highly as Tua. Earlier in the college year had the whole tank for Tua feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so Miami getting him was maybe, I think, more of a PR. Tua is not bad by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had Justin Herbert with those teams, we're having very, very – and Herbert, I'm not even going to say, is on the Allen Mahomes tree yet. I mean, he's not on their tier.
Right.
But you do wonder if he goes to a team
– like Miami. And then everything else stays the same. It's – yeah. Kevin O'Connell, Rams.
Okay, so he's with –
not 49ers.
He's with McVay.
Sorry. I thought for some reason – I mean, same kind of
– it's the same sort of
concept.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point there was is, like, I just feel like Robert Saleh could – kind of learn from a guy like that. I mean, look at what O'Connell has done as a head coach so far.
Love him.
I mean, he's been there since 2022, and the Vikings have been super solid. I mean, look at what he's doing with Sam Darnold. I know that's a player, but you got to think that he can also do that with a coach too. I mean, I wonder what he's done with Brian Flores, right? Like, sometimes it takes that kind of, you know, learning period for a guy like Saleh to, you know, learn stuff that he wasn't necessarily able to when he was with the terrible organization like the Jets. I mean, Saleh comes from the 49ers, which that's a great place to learn from and jump into the next level.
Yeah, really, outside of them having injuries, they win.
Yeah,
they
right.
win a lot.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know where he goes at this point because, like you said, it's probably going to be a next year thing. He's going to be a coordinator this year, but – or next – this coming year, I should say. But – he's one of those guys where if he lands in another AFC opponent, I'm a little nervous because the Bills have always had issues with his defense, and I don't really want to have to worry about that.
No, like, but you also, just with him too, how much of the toxic sludge of the Jets is going to kind of be worn off where it's like Saleh just had no choice.
Yeah, that, right.
That he was sort of a straw man out there.
Well, and that's what makes me more nervous is because, like I said, he has the idea with the defensive structures and things. If he gets in the right team with the right people, he's going to be really good.
I don't know if really good. I think he has a very good defensive mind. I'd like to see him on another team because I think he does deserve another chance. How bad the Jets front office and ownership really has been. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like he was getting a lot out of the team last year. And then this year, it's sort of they made the really quick jump fire. And, I mean, they've been terrible since. So yeah, we'll see. He should be an interesting name to see where he goes as a defensive coordinator because I think absolutely. And then if Flores actually is able to leave Minnesota and become a head coach somewhere else, because like you've mentioned, defensive coordinators have had difficulties getting coaching jobs. Not always. I mean, McDonald over in Seattle, Atlanta's guy whose name I'm blanking on, Raheem Morris, he's over there. You know, these are defensive guys. They've been able to get head coaching jobs. So we'll see. 803-0550, the number two call. We'll get more of a word on the Bills. It's coming up next. Sal Capaccio joins the show. You're listening to WGR.
There's some teams that are harder to sneak the ball on if they've got some bigger guys and they have a good plan for that. Sometimes it is just man-on-man and low man wins and, again, just trying to find the right crease and trying to get 1 yard. And sometimes, you know, we've been pretty successful at it this year, probably a couple times where I didn't do a good enough job. But it's definitely a powerful tool for us that maybe not a lot of teams can use it because of the size that we have up front. I'm at the quarterback and the guy usually behind me pushing, so...
There is Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen talking a little bit about the QB sneak action that the Bills have. Them and the Eagles kind of now become famous for. They're on the 1 yard line, baby.
The tush push and the snowplow. Let's go.
You know what's happening, and they score a lot of the time, if not like 95% of the time. For more on the Bills, as funny enough, the last 2 days have been very big news day for the Bills. We go to the Western Hotline as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, how are we doing on this morning?
Pretty good, guys. Good to be with you.
Going to be with you as well. Only two Pro Bowlers for the Bills, Sal. I'm somebody, I only really get upset for the players because I know it can play into their contract. This does seem to be the Bills' MO, though, like in this era. I think out of like one of these years, they got like eight, but for the most part, it's like around five or so guys that get these first nods.
Yeah, you know, I think every fan base, you know, looks at their team and props up their own guys and says, oh my God, I can't believe this guy didn't make it or that guy didn't make it. There's really good players around the league, right? But I think to your point, which is exactly right, Zach, which is the Bills have kind of, you know, been a team first team, right? I mean, that's do your 111th. It's not about the stars. They have some stars, and they have had some over the years. But I think even defensively specifically, yeah, I know Taron Johnson is a Pro Bowler, and Micah Hyde made it once, and Jordan Poyer made it once. But you really every year it was more about the collective sum of the parts more than anything. And I think this year really underscores that, especially on the offensive side, but on both sides of the ball. I mean, you can't have the everybody eats mantra and then expect somebody to have these unbelievable numbers that get them there, right? But at the same time, James Cook, close to 1,000 yards. I think he has a case, no doubt about it. And there's definitely, you know, other guys that you could say, okay, well, maybe he should have been there, and he wasn't chosen. I think the biggest snub is Christian Benford for the Bills. He wasn't even an alternate, which is ridiculous to me. Christian Benford, I think what happens with DBs is, I think you guys would agree that you get your name recognition through stats, right? You get your name recognition through interceptions around the league and things like that. He's got two, but he's just so good. Like, teams don't really throw at him much, and when they do, and he has really great, you know, numbers as far as, you know, holding receivers down or, you know, catches against them, percentages and things like that. So I think that's the one guy I look at and say, you know, I really – think he should have been on that list somewhere. But, you know, it's a Pro Bowl, and, you know, it's obviously their bigger goals for this team.
Yeah, so the one thing we were really looking at was James Cook, comparing him to some of the other running backs in there. And obviously, like, Derrick Henry, you're not going to overtake Derrick Henry, and even Jonathan Taylor, too. But Joe Mixon's a guy that has the same stats as James Cook, if not worse, in most categories. And it's just kind of surprising that he's in there and Cook's not. And obviously, Cook is the first alternate, so, you know, he's right there. But it's just still, like, kind of frustrating for how good of a season he had.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I would say Mixon really started off great, and then he had the injury, and he missed some games. But those first few games kind of probably put him there, right? Like, you remember the first month of the season, like, holy cow, Joe Mixon, he's awesome. And that probably really put his name out in the forefront for this conversation. And people just, you know, you just kind of think about, oh, yeah, Joe Mixon. He had his name out there. He was doing all these great things. James Cook's kind of got better as the season's gone on. He's been consistent, but I think he's been doing some of his best work later in the season here. And that's probably hurt him a little bit in the eyes of, you know, some of the voters and fans or whatever, you know, however that goes down. So you're right. I think statistically, you know, one for one, you know, you're right that James Cook probably deserved it over him. You know, Mixon has had a good year, but like I said, I think you go back, it really was mostly in the beginning part of the year when he was doing most of his work.
Looking to this weekend, Sal, the Bills did have, they had practice yesterday, right? I mean, it was a walkthrough, but they did hold practice.
They had a walkthrough, yeah.
All right, cool. Terrell Bernard, we know, is not playing. It's a quad injury. It sounded more, it's a mix between day-to-day, week-to-week, more leaning towards day-to-day.
Yeah, so that's what Sean McDermott said. The words he used were somewhere between day-to-day and week-to-week, more like day-to-day. So let me just give you my interpretation of that. I've covered the Bills and Sean McDermott, covered him for specifically in press conferences for 8 years now. And when he talks and says these kinds of things, there's kind of ways that you can read into it. So the best way I can read into it from knowing what he generally means by these things, and this is just my interpretation, that week-to-week means you're going to evaluate it next week. He just told you he's not playing this week. So what does that mean? You go to next week. That's week-to-week. So it's a week-to-week evaluation of the injury, but the severity of it would be more on the day-to-day side, if that makes sense, right? Which is, okay, it's probably a day-to-day, you know, see how he is, but we're not going to really evaluate him until next week. He's not playing this week. That makes it week-to-week. So now you're somewhere between day-to-day and week-to-week. I hope that makes sense. I think the bottom line is, guys, I think the bottom line is, I think Bills fans shouldn't really be worried until we're here next week and Terrell Bernard's not practicing, but I don't think that would be the case at this point based on the way McDermott sounded. I don't think there's any cause for concern that he wouldn't be available for the first-round playoff game.
And then on the Patriots side of things, we got news this morning. Drake May is going to play, which it seemed in the early parts of the week that maybe he was leaning towards not, but as the week has gone on, it looked more and more likely that May was going to play.
Yeah, you know, what is the injury? Is he it was concussion or what was the injury? He was dealing with something. I think he's dealing with something, which is part of the reason why. It wasn't just because they were going to rest him and sit him. You know, he should play. I think if he's available, he should play. And, you know, I get it. Like, there's a lot of these things floating around. You guys had someone talk about it earlier. You guys have talked about it, which is, you know, should the Bills want to lose the game? But it's just that you're not going to do that. Like, no, the Bills shouldn't want to lose the game. Like, listen, I'm going to say this again to everybody, all right? Can you imagine if – what is Sean McDermott supposed to do? Is he supposed to go to up to his players who are playing who have worked all year? Joe Andreessen gets a chance to start in this game, right? Let's use that as an example. So you're going to go to Joe Andreessen and say, hey, we really want to lose this game. Don't make the tackle. You can't do that. Like, come on. What are we talking about here, right? Like, it would be so disrespectful to do something like that to the players who've worked their tails off to have a chance to win a game. That's true. He's going out there to put good stuff on film. You know, the guy has a career to think about. He's going to try and, you know, be a backup quarterback or a starter or something next year, right? So all this nonsense about the Bills should make decisions to try and lose the game, it's just, to me, it's just dumb, to be quite honest with you. That's not what you do. It's professional sports. These people work their tails off all year, every week, to get out there and to try and play a game. And the coaching staff and everybody else owes it to them to try and do their best to win the game. You don't worry about the Patriots getting the number one pick. I don't worry about it. They have their quarterback. Sure. Could they be better and more enhanced by having a number one pick? Yes. It doesn't matter. You still have to make those picks. You still have to develop them. A few years ago, guys, the Miami Dolphins got a whole bunch of picks when they traded with the Niners for the Trey Lance pick. Well, where are they now? Well, what did it matter? What did it matter for the Jets have all those picks? The Browns have all those picks. Yeah, you don't worry about stuff like that. You go out and you play the game, you try to win.
I'm actually having a tough time thinking of any team that has like been able to get like that, you know, crap load of picks for someone to go move up. Like, I think of Washington with the Ricky Williams trade, where they got, you know, all of New Orleans draft, and it led to like no success at all. Like, it seems to be like teams that like lean in so heavy on those one drafts, it doesn't necessarily come out well for them. For May's other injury, it's a hand injury he's been dealing with.
Dan, thank you. I know you had a concussion a few weeks ago. And on the other side, the Patriots, it's the same thing. Now, look, I think they're in a different situation than the Bills here, which have, you know, you're playing the team that has the chance. You're playing your guy. You're going to the playoffs. The Patriots, yeah, of course there's going to be people inside the Patriots organization who'd rather not win this game, right? I mean, that would help everybody to get the number one pick. There's no doubt about that. But it's the same thing for them. Like, if you think about the guys who are playing in the game, and Gerard Mayo, like, you can't just I guess the way to say it is, are you going to purposely set them up for failure during the game? I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time believing Gerard Mayo is going to do something like that, nor should he. Brian Flores, apparently was asked to do that a few years ago, you know, by management with the Miami Dolphins. And he said, screw you. Like, I'm the coach. I'm trying to win games. Like, I owe it to the people in the locker room here. And I respect that. Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
Sal, shifting back to the Bills here real quick. So talking on injuries and stuff like that, how could that potentially affect, like, who starts, who sits, who might get called up from the practice squad? Like, you know, Terrell Bernard specifically, he's not going to play. Like, does that really impact, aside from Joe Andreessen, like, does it impact anything else, like, you know, call-up-wise? Or how's that going to look for the Bills?
Well, linebacker, it won't, because they don't have any call-ups. They have no practice squad linebackers, guys. They have one guy on injured reserve, Bale Inspector. Everybody else is on the active roster. You're going to see probably a lot of Joe Andreessen, Eddie Ulofosio, and Nicholas Morrow, I would guess, in this game. I bet you those guys all play in some capacity. I wonder what they do with Milano and or Dorian Williams. But at linebacker, it doesn't. But it does matter around the roster, Josh, because you only get two elevations. And I even asked Sean McDermott yesterday, are we expecting Mike White to play? Like, is that something that they're going to do? And he said it's going to be tough to get Mike White even on the active roster to call up, because look around. Like, you only get two elevations. This is not a preseason, 90-man roster, right? I mean, you can't just suddenly put in all these different backups and practice squad guys. You can't do that. The rules don't allow you to do that. You would have to literally cut players from your active roster and put them on waivers just to get more than two guys up from the practice squad. You're obviously not doing that. And think about it this way. Josh Allen's going to start, right? We know that. Well, do you want backup offensive linemen in there when Josh Allen's in there? No. You want starters, I would think, in there. So you're going to get probably your starting offensive line for whatever amount of snaps. And then from there, you only have four reserves. If you call Will Clapp up, you have five. I mean, so now to me, you probably want to do that so you can at least put five new guys in on the offensive line. But guys, from there, that only leaves one more elevation throughout the whole roster.
Sal, how much of the college football did you watch yesterday? Because I know me as a Texas fan, I was in a glass case of emotions. Let's just say
I did not watch any of the first game, the Texas game, until about the third quarter. I mean, I saw the score was kind of a blowout. We were over at my parents' house, and my mom was making dinner, and I turned on, I'm like, whoa, okay, let me check this game out now. And that's when everything was kind of happening for Arizona State coming back, and wow, what a fantastic game. Felt so bad for the kicker, but then, it obviously worked out in the end. Fourth and 13, was it, that they gave up for the touchdown? Oh, my God. I mean, how do you let that happen? If you are an Arizona State fan, it's just something that's going to live with you for so long. It's like 13 seconds with a Bills fan, right? It's like you had them. You're right there. Like, you could have been in the semifinal. You make one stop on fourth and 13, and you win the game. And they couldn't do it. And then last night, I guess I was pretty surprised. I didn't think that – I thought Ohio State could win. But, man, the way they just demolished Oregon was just ridiculous.
And also, like, the wide receiver factory. I will put this on paper. I still think LSU is the wide receiver factory for the NFL. Ohio State, you lose Marvin Harrison Jr. You may have upgraded with a true freshman in Jeremiah Smith. It's absurd.
He is amazing, right? I mean, Dan Orlovsky said he thinks a team could tank for him in a couple years. I don't know. That's a wide receiver. You know what I mean? Like, you're really tanking for a wide receiver?
Right,
I mean,
right.
I know that he's fantastic, but a little hyperbole there, I think, but he is fantastic, no doubt about it. It just seems like Oregon every year this happens to them, right, doesn't it? My brother got his PhD at the University of Oregon, so we follow the Ducks pretty good. He's always, he's a big Ducks fan. He went there, and so we follow them pretty closely. And I just feel so bad because, for that fan base, because it seems like every year they have this great team, they get in this position, and then they can't close the deal.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a Texas fan, but I always liked Oregon, kind of that Pac-12 after dark, and it felt like Oregon would be like 10-0, and then they'd play Stanford at night, and they lose. Like, it always felt like that's what it was. It was Stanford with, like, Kevin Hogan, and you're like, really? That's who you lost to? All right.
I know. So what do we got? Texas and Ohio State.
That's going to be the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, so Texas will have the home crowd. Yeah. And then today at 4, we do have Notre Dame and Georgia. Sadly, that game had to have been postponed to today due to the terror attack in New Orleans. And then they'll play the winner of that game will play Penn State next Thursday. Texas and Ohio State's going to be next Friday night.
Notre Dame's not beating Georgia, are they?
I think they are. Me and Sneaky Joe, we both got a bet that Notre Dame's going to win the national title. Georgia's got their backup quarterback, and since losing to Northern Illinois, Notre Dame's put teams away.
Yeah, then UB beat Northern Illinois the next week, by the way. Mm-hmm.
Their second ever ranked win in program history, Pete Lembo.
What are you thinking about what is the what's the word on Ohio State, Texas? I think you got to lean Ohio State at this point, the way they're playing.
I think Ohio State's going to kill them. Yeah. I'm not. I'm like next front.
Do we really think they can keep this consistency going, though? I mean, come on. Like, it's a Ryan Day-led team.
Sal, I'm sitting there with my girlfriend last night, and I'm like, we're busy next Friday night. She goes, cool, what are we doing? I'm like, we're watching Texas. And she goes, oh, are you excited? I'm like, nope, but we got to be loyal to the brand. We're going to sit through this whole thing. You're going to sit there with me, and we're going to watch them lose. She goes, you don't have to do that. I'm like, no, we got to be loyal to the brand. We got to be there to the end. I think right now Ohio State's a 6.5-point favorite. I could see that rising a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we got to the Bills have practice at noon today, guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm down here at One Bills Drive. We'll keep you updated on the latest injury report and what's happening from down here. And then players will talk a little bit after practice today.
And then Sean McDermott joining you tomorrow morning during the
extra point. On the Extra Point Show, yep, on this show, right around 11 o'clock, I would guess. We'll confirm that up today, but we'll get an official injury report as we roll into the weekend and the game Sunday at New England.
Sounds good, Sal. Talk to you soon. Thanks for joining with us.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. Going to take a quick time out here before we wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and it is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here for one final segment as we get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. One fun note that I wanted to bring up here with college football. So the seating has not been great. This is year one of the 12-team playoff.
They're working it out.
Yeah, and I've seen like every college football.
Don't abandon it, please.
No, they're not going to abandon it. They're going to have to fix the seating. The seating is not correct. Like, it is bad. There's no reason Arizona State was the 4, Boise State the 3, especially when they showed like the rankings. They're like, oh yeah, by the way, but like Boise State's actually our 12th ranked team, but they're going to be our 3rd ranked team.
You should just do 1 through 12.
I agree with the Big 4 champions, the ACC champion, SEC, Big 10, and Big 12. You just definitively get in. You don't necessarily get the bye. You just are definitively in.
Well, I was saying you take the AP rankings, mm-hmm, 1 through 12, and that's your seeding.
Like, I still want the power conference championships to have power. I don't want teams to literally go, I'm not playing this. Like, I'm literally denying or declining an invitation because if I lose this, I'm out. Like, I want it to be where if you win it, you're automatically in. It's just where the seeding will fall.
Right.
Because the stat I want to bring up is the fact that the first round bye teams, those being Boise State, Arizona State, and Oregon, are 0-3. If Georgia loses tonight, they have a backup quarterback against a very good Notre Dame team. The first round byes will be 0-4 in the inaugural 12-team playoff. That's not good, which also tells you how bad the seeding has been. It should be like the NFL, where you reseed.
Yeah.
It reseed after round one, the lowest seed will go to Oregon, because the idea that we're getting Oregon, Ohio State in round two is absurd. All because Ohio State lost one more game and didn't get to go to the Big Ten championship game.
Right. Yeah.
But I think we have the best teams left. Georgia, it's a shame they lost Carson Beck for the season. It may actually be better off for them. I don't think they've been all that good up to this point with Beck. They've been too up and down. They now got a mobile quarterback. We'll see. And then Notre Dame, I think they've been incredible. Texas likes to play with their food, but they've been very good. Ohio State, we're all seeing it. They're lighting teams up. And Penn State may have the best quarterback in the 2025 draft class who happens to not be leaving college in 2025. So, I mean, like, I think they're very, very good teams. I like where we're at right now in terms of the teams that are left, and I've liked the stories. Boise State got in, and they should have, and if it weren't for some turnovers, that'd have been a closer game. Arizona State and Texas had the best game of the tournament. Arizona State's building something. It just sucks that teams like Tennessee were blown out, Indiana blown out, SMU blown out. Because even Clemson and Texas also was a good game. Yeah. I hate to say it, but it was a good game.
Spread on Texas, Ohio State right now, 6. Exactly 6.
It's going to totally rise. That's going to do it for me and Josh. Sabres Live coming up next as the Sabres are out in Colorado to take on the Colorado Avalanche. That game coming up at 9 o'clock. This is WGR.